This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to the three-part interview with Dr. Tariq S. Bell-Bahar, who studies altered states of consciousness and cognitive affective processes at the New York State Psychiatric Institute in the Washington Heights neighborhood of Manhattan, New York City. Let's get to the show, The People Behind the PhDs. Hello, hello, this is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. And my ninth and my very, very special guest today is Tariq S. Bell-Bahar, Dr. Tariq S. Bell-Bahar. Bell-Bahar means of the ocean, which is a nice little fact I learned just a few minutes ago. Tariq studies altered states of consciousness, paranormal psychology, neuroscience of mysticism. You can kind of capture all of that under brain dynamics, and we're looking forward to hearing about all of those things shortly, which is super fascinating. Most recently, he was at the University of Michigan doing some fascinating research work, and he got his PhD from the University of Oregon. So, Tariq, welcome to the show today. How are you?
Hello. Yes, thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit, and hello to all your listeners.
Excellent. So the way I like to start the show is, you're the star, and I'd like to just really understand, as the show title says, the people behind the PhDs. So tell us about your life, you know, where you're born, you know, where you were raised, your brothers and sisters, the kind of things you were interested in as a kid. And that can kind of lead us up to maybe things that make sense for us later as audience listeners, how you got into, you know, altered states of consciousness, paranormal psychology, and neuroscience of mysticism. These are fascinating subjects for the average person. So how does someone study, you know, get to the point of studying those things? So go ahead and tell us about yourself, where you're born, and the rest of it.
Sure. Okay, so Zach, so right now we're just recording for your purposes, right?
We're recording for the world's purposes.
I guess what I mean is, anything I say, like now, if I have a question for you, like an aside, that's okay, you can cut that out.
Yeah, right? we could cut it out, or we can keep it in, either way. Yes, if you want me to cut it out later, We can.
Yeah, like for example this, here. I was just checking to see if that was okay or appropriate.
It's totally okay and potentially appropriate, yes.
All right.
So where are you from? And I always want to say Tariq, but it's Tariq, right?
Sure. I mean, it's just a pretty usual Arabic name. Everyone has an interesting story, kind of where they're coming from and their path and their lineage. My parents are Algerian and Polish, so my Algerian grandma named me Tariq. Anyway, I often tell people, like, oh, it's like the word Gibraltar, which mountain of Tariq, and was named so. It's during the Islamic invasion of southern Spain, back around, I guess, around 700 or 800 AD. So it's like a culture hero's name, and it's cool to have one. But it was also always easy to be identified as a foreigner at school growing up in New York City, as a teenager. Basically, I identify as an American.
Hey, Tariq?
Go ahead.
Hey, did you change your volume by any chance?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it seems to have gotten a little bit less loud.
Sure.
I don't know if you can go a little bit louder or not.
Okay, so maybe... Can you still hear me now?
Yeah, oh, that's so much better. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's so much better.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll start that part. We can start that part again. So I'll just go back to the question where you're from. So Tarek, tell us.
Sure.
Yeah, tell us where you're from. You have a great first name. Where's your name from?
Well, I mean, it's an Arabic name that I guess it's used a lot in Arabic countries or Muslim countries. My parents are from Algeria and Poland, and so I basically got my name from my grandma, who named me after like some hero who was, I think, the mountain of Gibraltar is named after him, and it means mountain of Tarek or Jibal Tarek in Arabic. Anyway, so it's cool to have a fun or unique name, relatively speaking. And though it was pretty easy to be kind of, I don't know, identified as like a foreigner when I was a kid and growing up in New York City.
Oh, you grew up in New York City?
I have a name. Yes.
Okay.
So that's I essentially identify as a New Yorker.
Okay. So, well, that sounds like a typical New Yorker, right? Algerian, Polish, and New Yorker. Like, New Yorkers have multiple backgrounds, so that seems like a pretty typical New Yorker in a lot of ways.
Totally is. Like, I think I fit right in, and I met people from all kinds of walks of life, and even without leaving the island of Manhattan, so to speak. I mean, back then, Brooklyn wasn't cool. It was dangerous.
Okay. So, but were you born in Algeria, and then you moved to New York when you were a kid, or what was the story there?
Born in Poland, kind of near the town my Polish family had been for some time, at least since World War II.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the name of the town in Poland?
I don't know. Some information is a top secret. I'm totally kidding. I think it's called the Jelenia Gora, but it's maybe near the Czechoslovakian border.
Okay.
The German border.
And then the Sakopane in the mountains of southern Poland, maybe?
Or close to there.
Okay. Oh, cool. So then you were born there, and after ages one or two, you moved to New York, or what? When did you move to New York?
Yeah, something like that. Like by the time I was five, I lived in New York, and then at a certain point, my parents divorced, and I basically went to live in Algeria for a few years with my dad's family there.
Okay. How old were you when you moved to Algeria?
About six, and I kind of stayed until I was about six or seven, until I was about 10 or 11.
Wow,
back to New York City.
So from ages 0 to 10, you went from Poland to New York City to Algeria and back to New York. Is that the correct trajectory of your...
Sure. Also to Toronto a little bit, but that was just kind of part of being a kid. I guess my dad was a chef, so he was just kind of traveling and on his way to New York City, where he eventually we lived. He still lives there today. Anyway,
what languages were you speaking during this time? Did you learn Polish at all growing up? It seems like you would have been exposed to Polish.
Eventually, I forgot it, but I still remember like. Spanish and French and Arabic. I guess the Spanish comes in from just growing up in New York City. At home, we regularly spoke English, Arabic, French, kind of like a mix.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's nice to also have been exposed to other cultures and kind of... not getting stuck in a particular culture or language cage. So I've always appreciated that I didn't just like grow up in one place, and it's made me a great appreciator of like don't know, human minds, some minds, others, psychology is one of the reasons why I got into a doctoral program at all.
Well, so, I mean, it sounds like, you know, having a mix of languages at all times, so you were never completely in a time in your life where there was completely just one language. There was always a mix of languages in your life, it sounds like. Stories. Stories are humanity's original technology, so I'm proud to carry on the traditional technology and share this story with you. Whether you're on an iPhone or an Android, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, or another podcast service, whether you're at home, in your car, at work, on public transportation, working out, or just walking around, I dedicate my shows to you. Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts, Consequential Stories for Life.
Sure, I'd say so. Eventually, not to make too much of a joke of it, but there were languages around me. Eventually, there were lots of voices in my head. But I'm just referring to some kind of like overactive intellectual cognition.
Sure.
Which involved reading lots of books and kind of going to the library and kind of coming back with like 2 dozen books and reading them over the weekend. And whether it was, I don't know, Beezus or Ramona Beezus kind of books. Whether they were kids' books or Tolkien books or Asimov, whatever. Just the life of words and language has generally kind of, I don't know, helped me stay alive, defined me in lots of ways. Maybe written language.
So having all these... Yeah, so having all these voices in your head sounds like just a normal adaptation principle for you, because you're swimming in different languages. Then why wouldn't you, you know, adapt in a way that you're interacting with the world in that very particular way? It seems very normal to someone like me just listening to a guy and putting myself in your shoes. So at age 10, you moved back to New York City for a longer time. Is that correct?
Yeah. Until I was about 20, at which point I moved to Alaska.
Okay, so what... So, before we get to Alaska, what was your life like from ages 10 to 20? Were you, you know, go to high school? Did you go to different programs or summer camps? What kind of things did you do?
Right. Mainly, I think, summers were spent at some point in Algeria for the first few years. I was a pretty introvert kid, so I would basically kind of goody two shoes and kind of come home, do my homework, and then read a lot of books and comic books, and then read more comic books and books, especially from friends. I call it my acculturation period, where I was becoming American. As opposed to just kind of a slightly out of place kid with anyway.
So when you're that's fascinating. So when you're in
dad, for
when,
example,
go
my
ahead.
Dad was from a totally different culture and kind of a different mindset. So he wasn't like a cool American dad. He was like a foreign dad who made it seem like I had to kind of push away my connection with Algeria or with maybe over-identify with American ideals or something like that.
So it sounds like you were between two worlds. Maybe in Algeria, they had you... felt like you were too American to be Algerian, and when you're back in the United States, you're too Algerian to be American? Was it sort of that kind of expression where you're a little bit of both, but not completely one or the other? Is that what you mean by going through?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like sitting on the fence as a spiritual motif.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, nevertheless, there's a lot of richness, I think, that the kind of multiculturalism added. And growing up in New York in the mid-80s was fun. I think just kind of a lot of diverse friends, a lot of diverse experiences. Eventually, I got into some trouble as a teenager and left my dad's place and lived in a kind of facility for youth when I was about 17 or 18. And that's where I guess started going to college at Hunter University there. But some of the other guys who lived there had never had families or had always had foster parents or had serious aggression or drug problems. But anyway, so that was a very awesome learning experience. It was also in the downtown West Village or East Village, so that was pretty cool too.
So you grew up, so when you were in New York, you were in Manhattan, is that correct?
Yeah.
What part of Manhattan was your family's apartment or house or condo, whatever it was in Manhattan? What part of?
Near Hell's Kitchen, like just south of Columbus Circle.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah.
So that's fairly central in a lot of ways. I mean, just south of Central Park there. And then you. It's just south of Central Park, right? When you talk about that area.
Yeah, at least five or six blocks from there, but it's. It was always accessible. So Central Park is a big part of my identity and kind of growing up there in New York.
So you got in some trouble at some point, and then you had to go to a different kind of place. It sounds like that was, you know, if I have to kind of think about your life so far, you swim in lots of different language and cultures, you know, different nations and so forth, and suddenly you're in a very different place with people who have very different family cultures, either no family, they're foster kids, or they have other backgrounds. Was that part of your consciousness that you were trying to, I don't know, like adapt and learn from all these other people who had very different cultural experiences, and in this way the cultural experiences are about their families and so forth when you were at this juvenile place? What were your thought processes at that time?
Sure. I was there with, I guess, my own issues or problems, and you know, they kind of kept us busy with work opportunities, and everybody kind of lived their lives. So, I mean, it was just exposure to, I guess, a diversity of like psychological problems and characters. I'm not saying it like drove me to try to do psychological research, but it was, I guess, trying to understand what leads people to do kind of irrational behaviors or highly emotional kind of emotionally driven behaviors, how to control that, how to conceptualize that. I guess some of my inspiration came from myself having issues with my family, as well as being other folks who suffer, whether it was at that facility or elsewhere.
So did any of the kids or your classmates stand out in your mind at the time who really forced you to think about how their mind and behavior could lead to certain outcomes? Was there anyone who really stands out at that time for you?
Not particularly, but from the range of people there, some of them have died on the streets. Others have successful consulting businesses. Others have literally disappeared. So it's kind of like a mixed bag.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I didn't mention that also during this time I got kicked out of high school, like in 11th grade or so. Whatever, my trajectory was already leaning kind of weirdly.
Leaning, wait, I'm going to repeat that, leaning weirdly. That's a nice expression. Well, the nice thing about this story, though, Tariq, is so if people listen to this and know you have a doctorate and you've been very successful by almost any standard, at age of 17, that's not exactly what your life looked like. I mean, you're kicked out of high school and you have to go to a juvenile facility for whatever issues, you know, that does not it doesn't necessarily lead to where you are now. So it's maybe good for someone who is going through something in their lives at a young age that there's always hope to do something different than that moment you're in. I mean, do you ever get a chance to share some of that with students, that you had this incredible story and look at you now? Do you ever have a chance to share that with people?
Number one, I don't think it's necessarily an incredible story. You know, everybody's story is interesting in some way. And also just having a doctorate, importantly, is not, I think, a kind of a gold standard measure of having success in life or kind of across the board or something like that. It doesn't necessarily correlate with happiness or income.
Thanks for listening to part one of the interview with Dr. Tariq S. Bel-Bahar, who investigates brain dynamics and the neuropsychology of mystical experiences. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's drz.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at Dr. Z Podcasts and Instagram at drznet. As always, happy deciding. The People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z. That's me. Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's drz.net/about.